Welcome home. We are WNST, Taos in Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're positively getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road in April. I will have Maryland Lottery scratch-offs. They're telling me I might have some home run riches. It's going to be 10 times the cash because I still have these. And we're doing something really special in baseball season this year for folks who've called me and said, he ain't on live no more. He don't do live radio no more. I'll be on from 2 until 5 live each and every Friday that the Orioles are home. We're going to be at Fadley's doing a Fadley's Friday turn. Luke's going to come down and hang out from 2 until 3, sign autographs, take pictures, probably eat crab cakes and shrimp salad if he knows what's good for him. We're going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Coco's next month as well. And moving it around, I'm going to go to some new places. I have a few sort of beads in on places we haven't been and other places that I want to go back to that aren't necessarily sponsors but are great places with great crab cakes and cool people. And I will be inviting some locals out, especially in this political season. Big thanks to Window Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube and our newest sponsor, Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean. I'll be educating you about water. This guy educates me about media. He is a longtime media executive, but the best part is, well, the best part would be if he were from Dundalk, but he's actually from Pikesville, so that means it's still good because he's from Baltimore. David Katz, our defending champion, Katz Mandu, if you're following him out there. Don't follow him next month or two. He's in love. It's mushy. He's getting married. It's beautiful. He's in Miami. He's missing opening day. All of that good stuff. But it is always good to have you back on. I wanted to like just dive back in with you because I think the last time we got together, it was, oh my God, the Ravens are going to the Super Bowl. It's the AFC Championship game. Hold on, hold on. Here we go. And then like that thing didn't go well. And I didn't call you. I haven't talked to you. I saw you on Facebook after that. And then 2 days later, the baseball team gets sold. And I don't know that. I've known you a long time, David Katz. And I've said this to a million people. There's never been a point where I've ever, over a beer in Manhattan Beach with you, or over some curry in London with you, all of these things we've done together, over a beer and Rocky Mountain oysters in Denver together. I mean, we spend time together in the real world, you and I. Have I ever said to you, one day the Orioles are going to not be owned by the Angelos family, and we're all going to? I just thought it was like Castro's Cuba, dude. You know, I didn't think this was going to end ever.
No, I think you and I were both of the belief that this thing was going to stay in the family for far too long. It already had stayed in the family for far too long, and that we would not be liberated. But I had been hearing rumors over the last 2 years that something like this was possible, something like this was likely, and Rubenstein's name had surfaced many times over there. And I had a bit of a tip a few months ago that this thing had been done or was close to being done. And I was hopeful and optimistic, but obviously there was nothing to report on, nor am I in the business of reporting on this stuff at this point, but I'm certainly in the business of enjoying the results of it. And I think we are incredibly fortunate to see a torch being passed, even though I think from an estate standpoint, you're not going to have the majority ownership transfer until Peter dies. But you really have a change of control, which is the key term here. And Rubenstein and the other gentlemen are really going to take over and take what is the foundation, a fertile foundation, and hopefully take these seeds and let them grow. And not only let them grow, but let them grow here. I think we have a chance to really keep the talent and add to the talent in a way that I think you and I were looking at what appeared to be hopeful and just waiting for when is the Mike Mussina move going to happen, where all these guys are going to end up playing for the Yankees and we're basically the farm system for the Yankees. And I think we now have not just the hope for a consistency over the next couple of years, but the chance to kind of keep this and turn it into whatever a quote unquote dynasty could look like here in Baltimore.
Ask you the same question I've asked everybody. I've done a lot of talking this week. You said you're not the guy that broke the story. I had John Arand on, so we got him on. I mean, I'm just going around to everyone who has been tortured and will feel liberated. You know, and people have called me and said I'm the one that fought the loudest, longest. Fair enough, and I'm going to feel great about it, especially if they let me back in. I mean, there'll be nothing for me like sitting in that press box and having a hot dog next to Luke Jones. So if that happens, I will feel professionally liberated, you know, but that's me, right? Like that's my personal thing. And I mean, Most professional people like you are like, you should have been in there the whole time. They never should have thrown. We haven't been dealing with anything normal here the last 30 years with these creeps. But I keep saying, if Rubenstein called me tomorrow and said, hey, I've heard about your thing. Let's meet off the record. Let's have a crab cake. No tweeting. No. I just want to get to know you, right? Okay, great. Somebody like you might set that up, might know him, right? I'll be fine. And at some point, I'll meet him, and I hope he's nice to me. And I hope he's as funny as Steve Martin, because he looks like Steve Martin a little bit. I'm expecting him to be funny somehow, because he looks like Steve Martin. But I've seen his television and this and that, and he seems like a good person and everybody. So I'm expecting, and it's not, shouldn't be a large expectation, but I'm expecting to be able to do my job again. If that happens, I will then be on the inside to ask questions of people, whatever, and I will know there's a transparency that as a journalist, and you being a journalist and in the space of doing nothing but hiring journalists most of your life, that alone, that I can ask questions and get answers, then I can judge. Is he lying to me? Is he honest? Have they been truthful? Have they not? I mean, the Angelos thing was so far off the chain that even the governor of the state last year bought into he might be an honest guy. Like, it's like Trump this year. Really? 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 Stop. So I would just say with Rubenstein, I'm going to feel it on my inside. When do you feel it, being a displaced fan of Miami watching games on television? Maybe you feel it when Kevin Brown doesn't get sit in the kids' chair for a month off the television broadcast. But I'm being really honest with you. We all expect something different. We know the team's going to be good. That would have been the first thing I would have said 5 years ago. Fix the team. Hold on. Team's fine. So I know signing one of the players will be one of the big – we give a – extend Henderson, extend Rutschman, whatever. That will be something. Well, the old guys wouldn't have done that. But on a daily basis, what do you expect from them to make this better? Because there's so many things that I could say to him. It was awful. This was awful. This was awful. This was awful. This was awful. But I don't know what the sign is going to be that it's under new management.
Before I answer that question, I am going to say, I think the number one signing / extension the Orioles can do is signing Mike Elias and keeping Mike Elias and Sig here in Baltimore. What those guys have done, their ability to identify talent at all levels. Look, you get number one picks. People don't necessarily think they think that's easy. There's a consensus typically among the top five or whatever you want to say, but they've nailed the picks, and then they've nailed the later picks, and then they've nailed the pickups of the picks. Like Aaron Hicks, let's pull him out and let's plug him in.
I don't think they nail these guys. I think what they do is that they teach them. Yeah, they identify well, but they train well. You know,
I think you're right.
Like that, they have special sauce about taking a troubled hitter, a pitcher with an angle issue or a spin rate issue, or not in command of his best pitches. I mean, they are true scientist. And Marvin Lewis always told me, like, I'm not a coach, I'm a teacher. I teach them how to do this better. And baseball didn't have that. And I always say that to Luke. Back when I was in the locker room, it was a bunch of old, you know, tobacco chewing buddies who hung around. I mean, that's what the system was in baseball.
You're 100% right. I mean, Cole Irvin coming in with more MPH on his fastball, and all of these tweaks that they do to these pitchers seem to be working. So anyway, the system they've built, it's taken time, but it has worked. To your previous point, and I think you're kind of getting also to the media side. I do want to see ownership that is willing to meet with the media, ownership that is willing to be more forward facing and not hide behind the veil of secrecy and barely show their face. Because when they don't show their face and they're not present, they don't feel engaged. They don't feel connected to the community. So I think just the presence of these folks, I think, is going to make a big difference. I do want to temper your expectations a little bit around media. And I don't know David Rubenstein. I don't know what type of system he's going to put in. I am hopeful and optimistic. I love the idea of a Baltimore-born, self-made billionaire who cares about the sport, who's at a stage in his life where there is nothing left but to win and to put it all out there and go for it, right? He's not going to build a 40-year legacy in ownership. The guy is going to go for it and try to win right now. So I love all of those elements. And from what I've heard, he's a wonderful person. And I've seen his TV show and his podcast and all that stuff. And I love what he does because he asks hard questions of the people he's sitting down with. and gets them to tell their stories. So I'm sure there's a little bit of back and forth that might be expected. But I do want to temper your expectations because the world we live in today is a different world than 20, 25, 30 years ago when you've been doing it and I started doing this. And there's an expectation that journalists go in, even in sports, and hold leadership to account. Because back then, the teams and the leagues were not media companies. The teams and the leagues today are media companies, first and foremost. They're basically real estate companies and media companies. And the anchor tenant of both of these institutions is the team, but the business is far beyond just what happens on the field of play and the record. What does that mean? That means that very often the breaking news that used to come from the journalists covering the team, who were trying to get in there and get their sources and find out who's traded, who's signed, who's extended, et cetera, that's now coming from the team or the league itself. The idea of controlling the media and making players available, where do they make them available? Well, first and foremost, they make them available on their own platforms. So we have to live in the real world where the NFL and MLB, maybe not college quite as much yet, but it will get there as it becomes more professionalized. They control the media in the sense that they are going to, one, take care of themselves first, and then two, decide who else gets to play. And it's unfortunate, and it's not the way that it was in the era that you and I grew up reading the stories and what made the Sun and all these other publications valuable to us as consumers is there was real news in there. And I think these teams are in a place where they're trying to put the quote unquote news on their platforms, and it's not really news, it's their version of the story. And it makes it challenging for media, especially local media that cares as passionately as you do about the teams that you cover and follow and discuss on a daily basis.
I like your front-facing idea for ownership. Just remember that when Bisciotti blows off the local media in 3 weeks. And a question for him would be how connected are you to the community as well? And that's a fair question for him who just got $600 million too. And the Orioles are about to get this money. And you know, we talk about Rubenstein and his age and his wealth. He's bringing Bloomberg in on this. He's bringing people in on this that to me feels like for him, it's not just a legacy play about the baseball team having a parade or winning. It's about the stability of downtown and about the sports teams being the most revered, the most financially supported, heart supported, that when players punch their wives in glass elevators, we forgive them and honor them and bring them out as player of the game years later. Like, there's all sorts of free passes that they get and they've gotten through all of this. But the biggest thing is downtown's struggling, and the baseball team plays 81 times a year, maybe more, downtown. And that was really the thing that got me sideways with Angelos 20 years ago when I moved downtown, which was he just doesn't care that the place is emptied out. And I think Rubenstein's play at $1.8 billion isn't, I need to win a title to feel like a real man. It's, I get a chance to make a difference in my community. That's where I feel like a stupid little AM radio station owner, that I feel like that's what I do on a daily basis, which is I'm not a hype man for the city. I'm not an apologist for the city, but I'm a defender and a supporter of the city. And I'm not necessarily an optimist or a pragmatist for the city, but I do see when a $2 billion investment is brought into the city by someone who has probably a bigger vision than I'm going to put a casino in the parking lot. I hope he has a vision beyond that. I think he does. I think he's a deeper guy than that.
He is, and he's a philanthropist and he's a businessman. And when you combine those two pedigrees, you're going to try to find a system that doesn't just give money and put money back into the community because that stuff is not self-sustaining. Giving money to people, these things tend to be one-time, two-time things. They don't create long-term change. Investing in a community where there are returns along the way, allow these things to be self-sustaining over longer periods of time.
Well, the Detroit model being a great example
Okay,
15 years ago, right?
I was just
Yeah.
going to say exactly that. Dan Gilbert's legacy is not going to be winning a title for the Cleveland Cavaliers and blah, 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 blah. His legacy is going to be what he has done to the city of Detroit, his hometown, and how he's built that up. And even in a place where he didn't own the team, he has invested with those owners and put a whole system in place to gentrify and kind of create a resurgence in the downtown community.
And nobody believed Detroit was fixable, by the way.
Correct. By the way, you and I think went to that Super Bowl. I don't know if you went to
In
that Super
06, I was at that game, yeah.
Bowl, and it was a far cry from what I'm told Detroit is like today. Back then, you didn't want to go down there. They were being, you know, that was the gift to the Ford family for putting a, you know, having the new Silverdome type experience, and you get the Super Bowl. But that city seemed unfixable. You're right, and especially with the decay of the American car industry, you thought there's no chance. Well, Dan Gilbert has proven that that is not the case. And I do think that the younger generation, if given a choice, would rather live in a city than in a suburb. There's more community and connectivity and walkability and all the things that that generation wants to do. So Baltimore, and by the way, Pittsburgh has had a bit of this as well. Baltimore needs it and deserves it. I can't speak to the whether the politics and the political infrastructure will allow this to happen, but certainly these quasi public-private partnerships that these baseball and NFL franchises have become allow these types of things to take hold. And I have to believe that a David Rubenstein is going to look at Camden Yards as a place not just to have baseball games, but to do more of what the Angelos started to do at the end, more concerts, more events, more festivals, more things in and around that, you know, beautiful structure that we have down there. And then the real estate play, which the city seems willing to and the state seems willing to open up for them, I think could be just tremendous. You've seen it, you know, in San Diego, around Petco. These are great places to live, work, and spend time. So hopefully Baltimore can get there. And I am, there's just a sense of optimism for the first time in more than two decades as to what this can be. And it's not going to be easy. And there's a lot of hurdles, and it's going to take time. But man, it feels like we've got the right pieces in place to see some change.
David Katz is here. He is Katzmandu, a longtime insider in the sports media industry, first at Yahoo and most recently at Fox. And of course, you're still operating your own website, correct? You give a plug there if you should.
Yeah, we are. I still manage the post game, and we have moved from being a website that you would have gone on to see our content on a regular basis when we were partners with Yahoo Sports, to an agency. We now build content, marketing, social media services for leagues, teams, athletes, brands, and media companies.
So
So
I
they
can
hire
call you for
us.
Baltimore Positive now.
You can call us, absolutely. By the way, we take cash or crabs.
Are you one of those consultant guys? Were you one of them out of town consultants that
Well,
Eklund warned me about?
let me tell you something. I started as a consultant way back in the day. I got out of it after a year and a half at McKinsey and Company. It was a great finishing school, but it was not where I wanted to finish my career. So I got out of there fast.
Yeah, I want to retire to being a consultant. That's what I want to be. David Katz is here
I figured it
consulting
out,
us.
Ness. You don't want to be a consultant. There's too much work in being a consultant. You want to be vice chairman. It doesn't matter of what. But you want to be vice chairman. You want the title and the compensation with zero responsibility. That's who's figured it all out.
VC, baby. All right, I got it. That's where I want to be. David Katz is down in Miami. He is up Pikesville. He is taking his family down to Miami to sun themselves. He's getting nuptialized on 420, which I hear it's a high holy holiday. By then we'll be into baseball season. I guess the draft will be a couple days out after your nuptials next month. I usually talk football with you. Like most of the time, it's football, football, football. That was a weird week, dude, right? I mean, not just because I wasn't going to the Super Bowl no matter what in Vegas, and I had Luke going, and we were doing this and that, and I did my charity thing and a couple Super Bowl. And then Sunday, they don't show up. They get their ass kicked. Monday, everybody's morose. And then Tuesday night, the baseball team sold. And since then, I don't know that anybody really feels that bad about the football team, although it was kind of like, this is the worst beat in the history of the franchise, right? Like, Lee Evans and Cundiff,
I
and
gotta tell you,
yeah.
the selling of the Orioles, as wonderful news as it is, was not enough to console every single person I spoke to at the Super Bowl and beyond. I am not over it. Everyone I talk to is not over it. I hearken back to the last time I felt this bad. Look, 14-2, and losing to the Titans was bad, especially the way it happened, but there was still a sense of optimism with a young Lamar and what this could be. The last time I felt this bad about a sporting event was Billy Cundiff and Lee Evans and what happened there. And I don't think the city would have overcome that moment of despair if we hadn't gone out and won it the next year. And in New Orleans, by the way, which is where next year's Super Bowl is. And we have got to resurrect ourselves. The resurrection has to come here. And we've got to do it next year. Because that was the opportunity that you look back and you're like, after 20 years of Brady, and we played them tough. I think we were 2-2 against Brady in the playoffs. We were his toughest out. I have not seen the Dynasty docuseries that's airing now. Everyone tells me it's great, and there should be a bunch of Baltimore in there because we were really his toughest AFC opponent for all those years. But it feels like it could get away from us. If Mahomes can win it in a year where his receivers are dropping all the passes and the team didn't even have it, and they can put it together and beat us at our seemingly best with what has to go down as one of the worst game plans in NFL playoff history, we panicked early on. We just panicked in that game. I think the city, the
Really
team,
makes me wonder about
could be a
Harbaugh.
very
Like
long hangover.
if I were the prick columnist, when you say something like that, I'm like, well, let's see. Belichick beat him on a trick play. He is the one who didn't call the timeout with Cundiff. They blew a huge lead in the Super Bowl that they actually won. They came 4 plays and a yard away from losing that game after that. The Chargers, the Titans, these terrible game plans, and like at some point. Harbaugh's the coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, at some point, the criticism for him would be if you're not. And how many playoff games have they won since the Super Bowl II in 12 years or whatever, right? So, like, Lamar's going to get that criticism because he's the quarterback and he's the one making all the money. But there really is, one of the constants here. And you've seen the Earl Weaver video. I encourage you to go watch it again. But, when Haller says to him, "I'm going to the Hall of Fame for what? For effing up World Series?" And like with Harbaugh now, if you hated the game plan, let's talk about the head coach, because
Yeah.
I haven't talked a lot about this dude. I went into the charity week. I haven't sat here and beaten anybody up or held him accountable for it. I feel like they just didn't play well. It was the you know like I've watched enough football, but then you go back and you say, how many times did they run the football? What did they do? And I would say they've been a panic franchise since Lamar got here. When they're losing,
Yes.
when they're losing,
Yes.
they are a different franchise. They win a lot and they're ahead a lot, but when they're losing, they tend to not. And then that Cleveland game aside, a couple years ago with the comeback and getting the phone booth, but when they're losing, they play unorthodox football, and I got to put that on John.
I agree with you. As much as I'd like to say no, here's where you're wrong, Nestor. I don't think you're wrong. I would say this: the NFL is 2 seasons, and you got to give credit where credit is due. It is hard consistently to be in that top tier, top four, top five franchise, and make the playoffs virtually every year, and have a chance, have a shot, which is what Ozzie used to always say, is you just got to get it. You got to win your division if you can. You got to get in the game, and then anything can happen. And Harbaugh does, and DaCosta, by the way, they do a phenomenal job of keeping this franchise relevant on a year-to-year basis. And that little switcheroo from Flacco to Lamar, whether it was kismet, luck, or vision, whatever, has allowed us to avoid what the Steelers are doing, which is the Steelers don't have a quarterback, don't really, it feels like they're a lost franchise, yet they still finish 9-8 every year. Maybe they can squeeze out an extra win or so. They're always there to make the playoffs or be the first team out. And they're doing that without a quarterback since Big Ben left. And we've figured out a lot of stuff. And to do that in a league that is set up to reward the losers and harm the winners is pretty remarkable. So I'm thrilled from an entertainment value perspective that every Sunday is meaningful for us. And that's a blessing. And you got to give Harbaugh and staff a heck of a lot of credit for that. That said, you hit the nail on the head. Our worst losses have come down to moments of panic that in retrospect did not need to be moments of panic. When you get behind a score or two or more that early in the game, you see it with great franchises. They chip away. They don't try to get it all back at once. They flip the script. They make adjustments on defense. So I think the panic there was actually less offensive panic. It was defensively, he didn't think we could stop them, and this was getting away. And if we weren't putting sevens up every time, we were going to lose this thing. And Mike McDonald made some adjustments in that game that were remarkable. Like, I don't know, I don't remember exactly, but I don't think they scored in the second half, the Chiefs, or maybe 3 points. I don't remember what it was, but they neutralized Mahomes in the second half of that game. It was remarkable. And if we had simply run the ball, short passes, built some momentum, take a shot or two, we would have been just fine. We would have won that game. But what was it? Six rushes from our running backs in the entire game?
You talk about getting behind, but it was 17-7 at halftime. So it was a 10-point game, and the Chiefs did not score in the second half. It's been a little while since I talked about the game. I had to pull the box score up because I literally haven't sat here and thought about it much because I haven't talked about it much because there wasn't a whole lot of talking about it. There was, oh my God, for a day, and then there was, oh my God, the baseball team, and I don't really want to talk about that loss. I mean, I would a day of that was plenty. 2 months later. I think the real thing you talk about now is how do you get back up, right? And how do you get back up when Billick would always say to me, I'm not going to let somebody come and bring a truck to the back door and take all my coaches out. Well, that just happened. And
It
whether
did.
John wanted it to happen or not, look, John took a lot of criticism about old man Madison and hiring coaches that might not be on the fast track to be head coaches, Trestman, some other guys, that they would be here for a while. And I think from a management perspective, and I've managed people, I've hired, I've fired, I've done all that, that's a good idea. But then there's your hotshot kid that you've groomed, there's a political word for you, groomed to be your guy, and he's here 5 minutes. He's great. It works out awesome. You go to the championship game, but you lose it. And you don't get the ring, and then they bring the truck and move everybody out the back door. But not just that. Lamar's salary, and I know they got a little bit of help from the salary cap bumping up, but they knew that was coming. That $10 million, that's all amortized in. They know where the cap's going. They know their revenues in the NFL, but they don't know anything. They know their revenue. They know their top number for sure. But for me, with this offseason, this is going to be an attrition unlike anything we've seen here since Billick called it a rebuild year 20 years ago, right after the deal for when Goose and all those guys left. We had that when Flacco, when we won, and Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, and that happened, and never really picked ourselves up from that. This is going to be the weirdest couple of weeks. I mean, all we're going to have in free agency is losses. We're not going to have any gains because they don't need money to have any gains. This is going to have to be done through the draft, and it's going to have to be done with the guys they've already drafted that they have in line. Replacements for Patrick Queen, replacements for Kevin Zeitler, potential replacement for Ronnie Stanley. They better figure this out and do it in a hurry because, 13-4 becomes 9-8 real quick if you're not careful.
You're 100% right. I'm really upset about McDonald. That guy seemed to be the future of the franchise in a lot of ways. And he had something figured out with his talent that his ability to move pieces around and get the most out of these guys. He really, think of how many of our defensive players had their best season under McDonald. So you talk about coaching up in baseball. I think his ability to coach up and put these guys in positions to succeed is very important. We've got some, if you look at our cap hits and you look at what the players that are consuming the majority of our money over the next year or so, these are guys that are no longer productive. And we're going to be sitting there eating a Marcus Williams and a Ronnie Stanley and there's some big and Marlon Humphrey and guys who are on the downside.
Marlon's got a hell of a podcast now. You know, I mean,
I love you, Marlon.
Alabama mouth and a Vanderbilt trophy case right now. So, you know, like I would just say for all of the bluster of how good they've been and how good Lamar's been, this has been, you know, not nearly as fulfilling as the Joe Flacco era at this point, right? And I you wonder, is there a window opening, window closing? And, you know, DaCosta's always, well, there is no window opening, closing. But there is the fact that this is going to be a diminished team this year. This is going to – now, the Chiefs just won a Super Bowl with a diminished team, right? So that can happen. But and the Patriots had all sorts of diminished teams that they won with because – they had a genius quarterback and a genius coach, right? Like, and they figured that part of it out. You know, I mean, Harbaugh and Lamar have going to have to figure this out because they're adding up some disappointments. You know, that they're the story of this era has been much like the Peyton Manning era in the beginning, disappointments.
Right. Look, the big question mark for me, when we lost that Cundiff Lee Evans game, I don't know if you recall, but the Ray Lewis's speech in the locker room.
Oh, I was standing in his locker. I remember it well.
Was an all-time moment for me in sports.
And well, I put a smile on someone's face.
Exactly.
The one, right? Yeah.
So I have that speech printed out. It is right here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. Is that black thing right there? That is Ray's speech. And that made me feel okay about what happened because there was perspective and there was leadership coming out of that. And we don't win a Super Bowl the next year without Ray Lewis being there, even though he went out with the torn tricep and somehow miraculously comes back. We don't win that. We don't beat the Colts and we don't beat Denver and we don't go through that without Ray. And that started the day that we lost that game the year before. So I ask you, like, where is that leadership? You know, Roquan seems to be a guy who galvanizes people and people love him, all that stuff. But, like, where is it coming from? Is it coming from Lamar? Is it coming from Kyle Hamilton? He's young, but he's tremendous. It's got to come from the team as much as it comes from the coaches. And that's where I'm wondering. That's what I'm looking for. And that's what made the next year possible. But I hope, Ness, that you and I are back in New Orleans next year. The Purple City.
I won't be in New Orleans. I'm doing a couple of Super Bowl. I'm doing my charity event next year. So I'll be there. Unless Chad Steele's no longer the public relations director and I get my legitimate press pass back, then maybe I considered. And we do a couple of Super Bowl maybe the following week or something like that. But, yeah, I'm committed to my charity at this point. So that's my plan next year.
I want Ravens Nation to be in New Orleans next year.
Be some king cake after they win the Super Bowl. Will you do that for me?
I'll bring you back a king cake.
I hate king cake, but I'll eat one with you because it's got purple on it anyway, right? Usually.
Yes, it does. I'm hopeful. And look, I'd rather be us over 90% of the franchises in the NFL. I like our management. I like our stability. You know, you made a comment about Bashotti before when I was talking about transparency with ownership and stepping forward. But I do want to make another comment because there's leadership comes in a lot of different forms. Some leadership is you got to be forward facing and you have to kind of, you know, the Jerry Jones model of like, I'm here. The buck stops with me. I'm going to take responsibility. I'm also going to take credit. And then there's another form of leadership where you hire the best people that you feel can do the job and you empower them. And you give them the resources to do it, and you get out of their way. That has been Bashotti's model. It has worked for us. I think he's one of the best owners in professional sports, and I'm going to put all the stuff that you've dealt with on to the side, and I'm just going to look at stability and success. You know, Steve's not putting the game plan together for the AFC champ game and, you know, tweaking things at halftime. But he has given the team every opportunity to succeed. And I think he has been a tremendous owner. And the juxtaposition of his ownership against Angelos in the same city, to me, also shows us how great a leader he has been for us. So I think we're blessed. I think we're blessed with the Ravens. I think top to bottom, there are a lot of people who'd like to be where we are. But I have the same questions and concerns you do. about what is this team going to look like when we step on the field in September. And a lot needs to happen. Now, do we get
Well,
Derrick
they have a
Henry?
level of confidence in Eric DaCosta that they're going to be a diminished team, but by week 16 they won't be. And if I were sitting in front of Harbaugh and DaCosta as I did the first 25 years of the franchise in the offseason, especially this time of year, I mean, Eric and I would always get together for a 3-hour coffee right around this time of the year, talk draft, talk who's in, who's out, what's going on. I would say at this point, there's no panic out there. They've been through this before. I mean, this is a team that went and got Van Noy and Clowney, and like, yeah, they'll figure it out. And it's not going to get figured out in March. It's not going to
Right.
get figured out on free agency. It's not even going to get figured out on draft day because it's all speculative. What they need to do is identify players that come next November, December, when Marlon Humphrey can't do it, they have somebody that can. The same
Right.
thing with Ronnie Stanley, because they know that you know that I know that we all know. You know, some of these guys are their cap number's wrong, and I'm shocked they let Zeitler get out. I mean, that's one more problem they have now, one more hole to fill. But you know, when you have salary cap issues, and it does harken back to, and I know you want to talk about the Flacco era and Ray's speech and all that, harkens back to the year after that, and the year after that, and the year after that, where it was all Flacco's problem because he made all the money, didn't have any wide receivers, and Ray was gone, and Ed Reed was gone, and Matt Burke was gone, and Perryman didn't work out. And you know, all of a sudden, you draft a couple of guys where it doesn't work, and you find yourself in a situation where you really can't win the Super Bowl. And
I think, by the way,
I
I
don't
think
think the
that was
Ravens
so
aren't
true.
that team next year, but I do think that they do draft up to be a better team in week 10 than they are in week one. I'm not concerned about the Ravens. They'll be a competitive team in November, December. I have no doubt about that. Now, whether they're going to be the best team again, I have I'm very skeptical of that.
Look, I don't disagree with what you're saying. Going back to what you just said, though, before about Flacco, I think the Ravens, and I think if you ask Ozzie, in retrospect, did they make a mistake in one area? I think there is one thing that cost us an opportunity to really run it back for a second year. And that was not bringing back Anquan Boldin over, I think, what was like a $4 million payment that he felt owed or whatever that's the salary was at that moment. And that guy earned it. That guy was the heart and soul. He played beyond his cap number. And I know you go to these guys expecting them to take a cut, and out of pride, when they don't take a cut, you're left with, you have to get rid of them because otherwise the message doesn't work for all the next guys down. And I think they kind of bluffed him, and Anquan called them on it, and they were stuck getting rid of him. And I think that was the death knell of that offense. And they had an opportunity one more year to kind of come back and do something special. But anyway.
All right. Well, it was a decade ago. At some point, we'll all get over the AFC Championship game loss and they'll play football again this year. But in the meantime, the Orioles are under new management, David Katz. David Katz is here. He is
Go right here.
Katzmandu. You can follow him out on the internet, a longtime sports executive of Baltimore and Pikesville. Never Dundalk, but we'll meet halfway. What would halfway be? Like Lock Raven? Somewhere around there. Probably right at WNST. Probably halfway,
Awesome.
right at Providence Road.
Awesome.
So yeah, absolutely. I'll get lunch with you anytime. Congratulations on the nuptials. I don't have you on super duper frequently every 3 months or so. So by the next time I get together, you'll have the wedding ring, you'll have a nice tan and happiness and all that. I just want to wish you and your bride well. You waited
Thank
a
you.
long time for love in your life, and I want you to go and rip it up and have a good time. I don't want to hear from you till like July. All right.
Thank you, Ness. I told Christina I don't need a wedding band. I already got one. I just want to wear this.
It's as big as
So
your head. Yeah,
there you go.
as big as your head. It's a paperweight.
That's
David
all I need.
Katz, Katzmandu, always consulting with me. And I need to call your new consulting company. I have some social media questions. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.